Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday, September the 2nd, 2026. 16 coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, and we have got a great guest who's going to join us this hour to discuss a story that has not only been taken note of here in Ohio, but really across the country at this particular point. And I'm just going to read it as it is before we go to our guest. Hours before Ohio College student and athlete Pierre Damas Bell took his own life, he called his father for help. It was around 8 a.m. and he was sitting inside his car on the side of Interstate 70, struggling mentally and emotionally with the shame of being forced to wear an ankle monitor by immigration officials. Bell, a 20-year-old student at Wright State University, said he had been bullied at school and felt humiliated by the device. "I told him to come home so we can talk," Bell's father said in an emailed statement. "Around 11, the police showed up at my door to report that my son threw himself under a truck." On Monday morning, Bell stepped into oncoming traffic and died from his injuries, the Ohio State Highway Patrol said. His family blamed the humiliation brought on by the ankle monitor that he had been wearing since July. Carl Ruby, a local pastor and immigration advocate, said in a statement that Bell's family wanted people to know it was a suicide related to immigration policies. Bell arrived in the U.S. in 2024 and applied for admission into the country using the now defunct CBP One app, Immigration and Customs Enforcement said in an emailed statement. He was released into the country and settled in Springfield with his parents and two brothers. The future seemed bright. Things began to change July 29th when ICE placed him in an alternatives to detention program with an ankle monitor while he continued his immigration proceedings. He documented the experience on social media, writing July 30th that he came to this country to study, not commit a crime or to hurt anyone. "Yet now I'm walking through the streets of the United States with a GPS monitor on my leg, carrying a feeling of shame and humiliation that I never imagined I would experience," he wrote. Bell was one of the roughly 300,000 Haitian nationals, living in the U.S. who lost their temporary protected status, or TPS, at the end of July following a Supreme Court decision. The policy change triggered a wave of fear and confusion in Springfield, where 12,000 Haitians live. Governor Mike DeWine, a Republican, has criticized the Trump administration's harsh immigration enforcement and its impact on Ohio residents. On Tuesday, he called Bell's suicide a horrible tragedy that never should have happened. "I think we have to ask ourselves, is this really good? Is this what we want done to people like this being picked up and facing deportation? Do we want that being done in our name?" Governor DeWine told reporters. And that's the story as we have it, and we are so glad to turn to our guest this hour for this story and a couple of other things with the governor's race just over 60 days away. He is a former governor himself of the great state of Ohio and a good friend of this program, former Governor Ted Strickland. Governor Strickland, how are you?
Well, I'm great, and I hope you and all of your listeners are doing well on this beautiful morning.
Doing very good. Governor Strickland, when you hear this story about Pierre Damas Bell taking his own life, Springfield, Ohio, 20 years old, walking into traffic on Monday, what do you think?
Well, I agree with Governor DeWine. It's a tragedy. It's a sad, sad tragedy that a young man who felt such despair would choose to take his own life. And, Scott, it wasn't necessary. This young man was hurting no one. He was a student. He was a member of a family. and yet he found himself really under attack by this government of ours. And so I agree with Governor DeWine. It is an absolute tragedy. And I was taken by the fact that Governor DeWine said or asked, do we want that being done in our name? And I think most people would say, no, we don't want this being done in our name. This is not who we are as Americans, as Ohioans, as citizens of this great country of ours. And Scott, as I read this story, I was thinking about all of your listeners. I'm sure many of them are God-fearing individuals who believe in the teachings of the Scripture. The Scriptures are very clear. In Leviticus, back in the Old Testament, and I'm going to read you this quote from Leviticus chapter 19, verses 33 through 34. And it says, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. That's from the book of Leviticus. But there are all kinds of teachings in the Old and the New Testament as to how we should treat the migrant among us. And it just hurts me. And I think it hurts all of us who read this story about this young man and the pain that his family is now going through. It's just unnecessary. This young man was hurting no one. And yet, our government is discharging thousands of people from Ohio and from other parts of this nation of ours who have been living here peacefully, working, raising their families, educating their children, contributing to our economy. But Scott, I've gone to Springfield and met with some of the folks there. Not just the, not just the Haitians, but I've met with many of the religious groups, the Catholic groups, and other groups that have been working to care for these folks and to help them adjust to life in this country. And it is just shameful what's happening. So it's shameful. It is so sad and so shameful. And I don't know, what we can do other than express ourselves, but this should not be happening in the United States of America today.
You know, I want to touch on Governor DeWine here for a second, Governor Strickland, because it's very interesting. You know Governor DeWine, and in the last year, people who have known him for a long time have said something has changed with Governor DeWine in his stance on the death penalty, encouraging the legislature to abolish the death penalty, the first governor to do that while they're in office, how he has defended the Haitian population in Springfield, how he has defended his handling of COVID, and of course Amy Acton, one of the candidates running for governor, and this story where, as you just said, his quote is, I think we have to ask ourselves, is this really good? Is this what we want done to these people who are facing deportation? Have you seen a change in Governor DeWine over the years?
Well, let me share something that happened after Governor DeWine was elected, but before he was sworn in as governor. That's been many years ago. Governor DeWine called me and asked if the two of us could meet for breakfast. No staff, just the two of us. And he wanted to talk with me about two issues that were of great concern to him. And one was the opioid crisis and the fact that we were losing so many people to drug overdose. And the second thing he wanted to talk about was the death penalty. And I remember saying to Governor DeWine in that meeting, Mike, I know you are a committed Catholic, and I assume that this death penalty is a problem for you because it is opposed to Catholic teachings. And he said to me, but Ted, I voted for the death penalty bill when I was in the state Senate. And I said to him, but Mike, we all change as a result of new experiences, learning, new learnings, and so on. And so I said, Mike, I would like for you to be spared the regret that I have as governor. My greatest regret as governor was not just saying that as long as I'm governor, we will not have a death penalty. Well, no one has been executed during the 8 years that Mike DeWine has been in office, and I applaud him for that. I think that is consistent with his deeply felt beliefs.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. And his feelings on immigration, how he handled things during COVID, a lot of people who I have known, who have known or had communication with Governor DeWine over his, you know, many, many decade life in politics, say there seems to be some kind of change in the last few years. Have you felt that?
Well, I don't know what's going on in the governor's heart and mind, but I can speculate. And he is approaching the end of his political life in terms of elected office. And I think that has freed him up to be his true self. As you know, Governor DeWine has had a legislature, although controlled by his own party, that has stood in his way multiple times, overridden his vetoes, and so on. So I think he has been constrained by his legislature in a way, but now he is approaching the end of his tenure, and I think he feels that he can speak out in a way that may have been almost impossible previously. But just let me say, Mike DeWine knows the country of Haiti. Many of your listeners may not know this, but Mike DeWine and his wife, Fran, have been deeply involved in Haiti for many, many years. And they have supported a facility there overseen by a wonderful Catholic priest, providing needed care and comfort and safety to many of the children in Haiti. Mike DeWine has raised money for that facility. He has visited that facility on multiple occasions. He knows the Haitian people, and he knows the circumstances that exist within Haiti today. He knows how dangerous it is. He knows how the drugs and the gangs are in charge of much of that country. And so I think he has a deep love for and concern for the people of Haiti. And I applaud him for that. You know, as you know, until the Supreme Court made their decision allowing President Trump to basically get rid of the temporary status program under which many of these Haitians living in Springfield and other parts of our country were able to live in peace legally, and the Supreme Court, at the urging of President Trump, said that he had the authority to terminate that program, and that's what's resulted in this massive effort to go after these good people who have done nothing wrong. And this young man who's taken his own life, apparently, because of this, is just one example. But it is so sad and so contrary to what I believe are the values of our country. I condemn President Trump, and I condemn this Miller, who is his deputy chief of staff, I believe, who I believe are just racist people. I think they only care about basically white Christian nationalists, and that's a terrible thing for me or anyone to say. But I think the evidence is there that if you're not a white Christian nationalist, and I separate Christian nationalists from Christians, because Christian nationalists, as you know, have a very distorted view of our country and of how it ought to be governed, and so contrary to our nation's constitution and our founding fathers' ambitions for this country to be a country where all people, regardless of their beliefs, religious beliefs or non-religious beliefs, could live together in harmony. And so there are many people who really want to totally change the character of this country of ours and to make it into something that our founding fathers and our Constitution certainly never envisioned. And it's very troubling. This is a very troubling time in the history of the United States of America. On our 250th year, to think that there are people in positions of great power who want to fundamentally change this country into something that it has never been.
You know, Governor Strickland, I think one thing that is so stark about this story and why it has made national news is because here you have a 20-year-old college student, Wright State University. 8 a.m., he calls his father. He's sitting on the side of Interstate 71. He's struggling mentally. He's written about this on social media, about having to wear this ankle bracelet. And 3 hours later, the police are knocking on his father's door saying that his son has committed suicide by walking in front of a truck on the interstate. You know, not that any kind of suicide is good, but that's very stark, to walk into oncoming traffic here in Ohio. The starkness of this is just horrible. What must this 20-year-old have been going through mentally to do what he did?
Well, as I said, it's quite sad. He obviously was a desperate young man. He did call his father, and according to reports, his father urged him to come home so that they could talk. And before he did that, he apparently decided to take his own life in this tragic way. There's so much pain in this story, Scott. So much pain. Unnecessary pain. Why was this young man forced to wear this ankle bracelet? He was not committing crimes. He was not a danger to anyone. He was not a danger to society. He was a college student. He was living his life, experiencing the American dream, he thought. He had finally gotten to this country after living in a chaotic, dangerous environment. He apparently thought, you know, that he had arrived at a place where he could be safe and where he could learn and where he could study and where he could be a part of the American dream. And yet he was singled out and he was forced to wear this ankle monitor. And apparently it was humiliating for him. So I don't know. It is so sad. It's difficult to know what drives anyone to take their own lives. But apparently in this case, he just felt so overwhelmed by what he was having to deal with that he saw no other way out. And as a result, his life is terminated, and the lives of his loved ones, his family, will forever be changed. They will never get over this. And we, as Ohioans, must live with the consequences of what's happened here. But he's just one example, Scott, of so many others who are feeling this kind of fear. And it's unnecessary. These people in Springfield were contributing to their community. I mean, I've been down there. The community has grown as a result of their presence. There's so many church groups who are working with these folks, trying to help them establish themselves in this community of Springfield. It's inspiring to me to see how local people, you know, probably Republicans, Democrats, you know, whatever, have gathered together and shown support for these people, for this community of immigrants. And yet the federal government, Donald Trump, and Stephen Miller, living in their palatial environments, you know, having nothing to fear from their government, would single out these immigrants like this. It is so contrary to what we ought to be believing as Christians. It's so contrary to what Jesus taught in the New Testament. You know, he said, as often as you have done it into the least of these, you've done it unto me. And yet there are so many people out there who, you know, who like to call themselves, I guess, good churchgoers and good Christians and good Americans, who seem to have no capacity to show compassion to these folks. It's so sad.
You know, Governor Strickland, we're just over 60 days now until big elections here in Ohio, big Senate race, big governor's race coming up. Not to politicize a story like this, but do you think this will affect people going to the polls in just about 60 days, a story like this?
Well, it should. I don't know if it will, but it certainly should. Because this is an example of an authoritarian government that we have in this country, who is pursuing policies that are contrary to who we are as Americans. I mean, as the governor asked, do we want what's being done in our name? Most Americans don't. The polls show that Donald Trump is underwater when it comes to his way of treating immigrants and this deportation effort he has underway. So most Americans don't agree with this policy, but it's still being pursued by Donald Trump as he pursues an illegal war in the Middle East, and as he sees more of our people going without health care, as he sees prices increasing on a daily basis almost, and there is turmoil in this country. There's turmoil in our Defense Department. Are we less safe now than we were when Donald Trump started this war? I believe we are. It's just things are really difficult in America right now. And it's because of the leadership of a man who seems to have no moral guidance, but is in it for himself and his own enrichment and the enrichment of his family, his kids. To hell with the average American worker. So, you know, we've got an election coming up here in Ohio and across the country. And it is my hope that the American people will flood to the polls and say no to this administration and elect people to the Congress, to the House, and the Senate who will put the brakes on this administration.
Governor Strickland, we've got about 19 minutes left here, and we know that you have endorsed Amy Acton for governor. And there are a couple stories here I want to run through just to get your thoughts on. I think a lot of people have thoughts on them. The first one I want to read just so we don't misquote anything. I believe this was from last week. It's been the last 2 weeks. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Dr. Amy Acton opposes ending qualified immunity for law enforcement and says controversial flock cameras have helped solve many crimes. Acton tackled several questions about law enforcement after announcing her endorsement from the Ohio Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, which is also backing Democrat Sherrod Brown for U.S. Senate. The police union split with the Fraternal Order of Police in Ohio, which endorsed Acton's Republican opponent, entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy. If elected, Acton said she'd do a comprehensive review of public safety and emergency response, including AI-powered surveillance technology like flock cameras. Supporters of the technology say it helps police solve crimes and keep Ohioans safe, but critics worry about privacy and whether local agencies are using flock to help in immigration enforcement. We're working very closely with our law enforcement officers to use technology in all the right ways to protect Ohioans, Acton said during a campaign event stop at Scotty's Cafe near Bexley. I absolutely know that we have had, as Governor DeWine has said, many crimes solved due to the use of this technology. Acton also weighed in on a ballot campaign to end qualified immunity for law enforcement, which would make it easier to sue police. Police officers would not want to go out or take the job in the first place if they didn't have some legal protection against their own personal assets, Ohio Patrolmen's Benevolent Association Chief Legal Counsel said. We would be opposed to any type of changes to qualified immunity, and Dr. Acton has indicated that she would support us on that. OBPA's director of organization said Acton would back the union's efforts to increase municipal employers' contributions to police and fire pensions, an issue that has stalled in the GOP-controlled legislature, where Ramaswamy's running mate leads one chamber. These contribution rates have not been changed since the Reagan years. And maybe this is the most important part. Acton also said she wouldn't join other Democratic governors directing local police not to assist federal immigration enforcement. We always work with the federal law enforcement, and we will do so whatever it takes to keep Ohioans safe, Acton said. What do you make of those stances, Governor Strickland?
Well, as with any statement that a political person makes, there's usually nuance and context. And I have no question that what Amy Acton will do everything to protect the civil rights of Ohioans. And in terms of these flock cameras, for example, can they prove a benefit in solving crimes? Absolutely they can. Can they be governed in such a way that prevents them from misusing the information they get through that technology? Of course they can. There needs to be guardrails. There needs to be severe punishment for those who would take information gathered through those cameras and misuse them. And so it's an example, I think, of where there is not a totally right or a totally wrong answer to the question, but how is the policy implemented? What are the safeguards surrounding that policy? And how can we make sure that information gathered and gleaned from those cameras are not infringing upon the civil rights of the citizen? And I think that's probably possible. I'm not an expert on those cameras or the technology involved. But I do believe that that guardrails, appropriate guardrails, can be put in place that will make the use of those cameras acceptable. In regard to qualified immunity, this is an issue which has been a subject of debate for a long time. And I am very sympathetic to police officers who say, wait a minute, if I'm my duty as a police officer, can I be held personally liable? And I think it's a real problem. You know, I worked in the prison system for many years, Scott, as a psychologist. And living in that and working in that environment, I was protected. But if a suit against me, an example, I think we ought to make it very clear that police organizations can be held liable as opposed to individual police officers. And I think if that is undertaken in a robust way, it will solve the problem of inappropriate police behavior or police brutality.
So on that particular line where it said this was from the Ohio Patrolmen's Benevolent Association Chief Legal Counsel, we would be opposed to any type of changes to qualified immunity, and Dr. Acton has indicated that she would support us on that. Are you in favor of that as well, Governor Strickland? No changes to the qualified immunity?
No changes that will hold the individual police officer responsible. There may be other changes that could be made that would reinforce the liability of the police organization. I don't know about that. I haven't really looked into that, but I think there may be the ability to say, although the individual police officer is not liable, his employer is. And I think that would encourage police departments to make damn sure that their officers have the appropriate training necessary to conduct their obligations and responsibilities appropriately.
And the other part of this, just to touch on, because I think in talking about our story and what happened in Springfield on Monday, and I think this has been getting the most attention from the previous story, it said Acton also said she would not join other Democratic governors directing local police not to assist federal immigration enforcement. Her quote was, "We always work with the federal law enforcement, and we will do so whatever it takes to keep Ohioans safe."
And I don't believe that she was giving a blanket endorsement for ICE behaviors in that statement. Of course, she's not going to. Support the actions that ICE undertook in murdering citizens in Minnesota. Of course, she's not going to support that kind of federal law enforcement. There's a difference between endorsing that kind of behavior, which I think is outrageous, and I really think it amounts to murder, and those responsible certainly should be held accountable. But of course you follow the law, and you do what you're obligated to do when it comes to enforcing federal law, but there's a big difference between acting responsibly like that and endorsing behavior that results in the misuse of force, the killing of citizens, there's no way any Acton would support that kind of ICE behavior. Absolutely no way.
And one other issue here on the governor's race, and then I'm going to get back to what we were talking about, because this kind of threw people for a loop. And I'll just read the headline here. Democratic governor candidate, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Amy Acton said recently that she supports Issue 3, the voter ID amendment that will appear on the November ballot, breaking with most elected officials in her party, including Alison Russo and Ohio Democratic Party Chair Kathleen Clyde. And I believe this past weekend there was a rally in the Columbus area with Vivek Ramaswamy, Robert Sprague, who's running the Republican running for Secretary of State. They support Issue 3, and Dr. Acton says she supports Issue 3. How do you feel about Issue 3, Governor Strickland? Which would, for people who don't know, what it would do is it would make voter ID, having voter ID, part of the Ohio Constitution. It already is the law in Ohio, but it would make it part of the Constitution and harder to remove if somebody would want to do that.
Well, you said it correctly. It would make no difference in the experience of an Ohioan going to cast their ballots or to vote. No difference at all, because that is a part of Ohio law now. Now, the Republicans are very sly. They like to identify issues that are potentially divisive, that have nothing to do with the real life of Ohioans. And this is an example of that. So I support Dr. Acton's position here. I think it is unnecessary. I think it's unnecessary because it's already a part of Ohio law. But I'm pleased that Dr. Acton is not allowing the other side to identify issues which are basically little or no importance to try to engage in a divisive debate. And so I think she's being very wise here. And so I support her position. Scott, there's so many issues that are really important to the lives of Ohioans. And what Republicans attempt to do so often is to identify issues that can be very politically explosive or divisive, and try to focus the attention on those kinds of issues. Dr. Acton is not putting up with that. She's focusing on the real issues of affordability. She's talking about health care. She's talking about the price of groceries. She's talking about the price of gasoline. She is focusing on the things that really matter to the people of our state, and not allowing herself to get pulled into a meaningless, divisive argument that has little or no effect on the lives of Ohioans. And I think she's driving the Republicans crazy, because she's wise in making sure that she and her campaign are focusing on the issues that are central to the lives of the people in our state. Affordability. Are you going to have access to health care? Can you afford gasoline to drive to work? She's focusing on the real issues, and Ramaswamy and his crowd are very frustrated, because they would like to focus on things that really have little or no effect on the lives of everyday Ohioans.
Governor Strickland, I want to get a few other questions in here. Are you in support of Issue 3, just for people who are interested?
I will vote for Issue 3, yes.
You will vote for Issue 3. Do you think there's going to be a gubernatorial debate? There's some question of that.
I doubt it, quite frankly. I have no inside information, but we're getting very, very late in this campaign, and I have no knowledge that any discussions are underway between the two candidates regarding debates. And, you know, I have mixed feelings about debates. I've always debated, and I've always encouraged my opponents to debate. Few people actually watch debates. That's the truth. Few people watch political debates, and they consume a lot of time at a critical point in campaigns. So I don't know if there'll be debates or not. I think that the differences between these two candidates are becoming increasingly clear. People do not like Vivek Ramaswamy. He's arrogant.
He's a privileged guy who looks down his nose at the rest of us. He calls our educational system mediocre. He says our educational system is failing. That's why we have to import high-tech talent from India and South Korea and elsewhere. He calls American workers lazy. I mean, Scott, this guy who's never worked enough to get a callus on his hands in his life has the gall to call American workers lazy, Ohio workers lazy. He moved his company out of Columbus to Texas so he could get a better tax break in Texas, and yet he wants to be the governor of Ohio. I mean, people are seeing through this guy. He's a con artist, as you know, about the so-called Alzheimer's drug that he got people to invest in, and then shortly before the clinical trial proved it to be a failure, he withdrew his resources, made millions of dollars, and left other investors holding the bag. This guy's a con artist. He's not one of us, and I don't think Ohioans will ever make Ramaswamy governor.
Governor Strickland, two questions I want to get to in our remaining few minutes here. This certainly is political ad season, and Dr. Acton has had a lot of mean-spirited, to say the least, ads run against her in regard to not taking training and using prescription drugs and alcohol and all those ads that we've all seen 1,000 times. There are Democrats who I have talked to who are absolutely voting for Amy Acton, absolutely have no intention to vote for Vivek Ramaswamy, but they want her to answer those ads. They don't like that she personally has not answered those ads in a public forum. What's your feeling on that?
I think she needs to let sleeping dogs lie. These ads, you know, Scott, Vivek Ramaswamy and his billionaire supporters have spent multiple millions of dollars in these negative ads, and they haven't moved the needle one point, not one point. Think of that. What that says to me is that the people of Ohio are seeing through this. You know, they got this Republican activist, this woman, who made this accusation against Amy Acton, saying that her mother was in a nursing home and dying, and no one could visit her. And she says, and I blame Dr. Amy Acton, I'll never forgive her. The truth is, that woman's mother lived and died in Kentucky. Nothing that Amy Acton did had any influence into who could or could not visit her mother during her final days. And this woman is using the death of her mother, think of that, to try to score a cheap political point. That's the extent. That's how desperate they are, Scott. They will make up stuff.
Well, And I think that's my point in our final few minutes here. Here we are, just over 60 days from the election. This thing has been tied up gubernatorial-wise for a long time. What's going to break this tie? How confident are you that Amy Acton's going to take this home in 60 days and be the first Democrat elected governor since you the last time around? What's going to break the tie, and how confident are you that she's going to win?
Well, as I pointed out, Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk and his billionaire buddies have already spent, I don't know, 50, 75, I don't know how many million they've spent in criticizing Amy Acton, and it hasn't moved the needle. Now, Amy is getting to the point in this campaign where she has the resources to do her own advertising on the various platforms and on, you know, network television and so on and so forth. She's just beginning to spend her money to promote herself and to tell the truth about Vivek Ramaswamy. So I think this is my prediction, and Scott, I'm not only giving it to you, but I've been telling my friends that I think by mid-September, Amy Acton will have started opening up a lead in this campaign. And come November, she will be elected as Ohio's first woman governor, and she will be a wonderful governor. She's a wonderful person. And all of these attack ads haven't changed the fact that Amy Acton is a good and decent and competent person who will provide Ohio with great leadership in the years to come.
Governor Strickland, with just a minute left here, I want to make sure we get this in. President Trump recently said the only reason that communities throughout the USA should not want data centers is if they want to end up being backwards and poor. If they want to be successful and rich with far lower taxes and jobs all over the place, let data reign. What do you make of the president's comments in 1 minute?
Well, the governor or the president knows how to get rich because he has earned about $2.5 billion in the last year and a half while being president. So he is motivated by one thing, money. And for him to come into communities like communities in Ohio and say, if you do not accept these monstrosities, these energy-using, water-using, pollution facilities, then you're backward. Give me a break, Donald Trump. The American people have caught on to you. You are the ultimate con man, and your support for these data centers will just demonstrate even further to your base that you don't give a damn about them. You're only concerned about your own wealth and personal enrichment, and to hell with what happens to this country. And it's a shame that you are the president.
Governor Strickland, I can't let you get away without asking you this. Governor DeWine, at his last Ohio State Fair, was asked about a newly renovated building down there and if it should be named for him, and he said no, it should be named for former Governor Strickland. What do you make of that?
Well, I thank the governor for that. You know, those kinds of things don't mean a lot to me, Scott. I've never been into, being recognized in that kind of way, but I appreciate the governor, and I thanked him profusely, and I told him that what I think ought to happen is that wonderful carousel at the fair that he and Fran are responsible for having, that carousel certainly should be named a Fran and Mike DeWine carousel.
Not a bad idea. Governor Strickland, I always thank you for coming on, and I know you're friends with Amy Acton, and hopefully we'll get to speak with her sometime in the very near future. She was on in October, and we'd like to speak with her again before the election, and we hope we will get a chance to do that.
Well, I'm 100% behind Dr. Amy Acton, and I'm 100% opposed to Vivek Ramaswamy, the con man.
Former governor of the great state of Ohio, and always willing to speak his mind and give his opinion and come on this program, which means a lot, former governor of the great state of Ohio, Ted Strickland. Governor Strickland, always my pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Scott. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, former governor Ted Strickland, we're done for the day. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
People at school have noticed changes going on with you, and we're concerned.
Like what? Who?
Some of your friends, teachers. Sounds like you've lost interest in a lot of things lately. You're hanging with...